Hello, and welcome to Introducing Me. I'm your host, Sarah. I started this podcast to get to know other people and lifestyles while discovering more about myself. Each episode, I will give a new guest a chance to discuss their background, culture, interest, or whatever they want to talk about to help increase all of our own worldviews. Today, I would like to introduce you to Devin. I found out about Devin because she is on TikTok. She had just reached 270,000 followers on TikTok, and she talks about a lot of different things. She is currently in law school, which is, in my opinion, just a feat of its own. But she also supports and talks about fat activism and eating disorders, diet culture, and just kind of having a good vibe around all of those things. She's a super uplifting person, and her content is really enjoyable. So thank you, Devin, so much for being here. Why don't you go ahead and say hello?
Well, thank you so much for having me. That was a pretty excellent summary of what I do and what I talk about on TikTok. I started my TikTok in March of 2020 during the original first very scary lockdown of the pandemic. And because something else I talk about, I am a living caretaker for my 94-year-old Nana, who also has dementia. So because I live with her, I never, ever leave the house. And I am a radical extrovert. So to keep my sanity in these times, I started a TikTok account. Turns out some people like me. And so I just kept going. And 270,000 followers later, here I am. And people are still listening to me. And I get awesome invites like yours to be on podcasts, and it's kind of surreal. And yeah, I talk about, you know, my fat experience. I grew up as a chubby child. I experienced some very deep problems with eating disorders in high school, and was basically on a diet since I was 10 years old, and just kind of talk about how I got from there to being 28 and in control of my life and rejecting diet culture and all of the positives that come with it. And I know my story isn't unique, and so I hope to use it to help others, because I know it can be very, very difficult to exist in a world that's constantly telling you your body's wrong. So I really enjoy what I get to do on TikTok.
Great. So would you be willing to share some of that personal stuff from when you were younger? How did you end up on a weight loss program?
Well, like many, and I've actually come to realize many, many, many people share this story, unfortunately. When I was 10 years old, I was put on Weight Watchers, and not like secretly. Like, I was walked into the meetings. I was signed up as a 10-year-old on an adult diet plan. I was weighed in front of other adult women. My weight and whether I lost or gained weight was announced in front of strangers. I then went into the meetings, which if weight loss meetings are just grown people talk, mostly women talking about how food is an enemy. And from there, I was basically on diets until I was about 26. Weight Watchers was the first one. When I was 15, there was one that was like a body busting boot camp weight loss program. That's when I developed my struggles with eating disorders. They had you eating, like, everybody was eating 1,200 calories. It didn't matter that one woman there was a foot shorter than me and I was a 15-year-old high school athlete. Everybody ate 1,200 calories. I'm 5'9". I was an athlete. I was a growing kid. there was only one way that was going to go. And it started with me basically just never eating, ripping up food so people it looked like I ate. And then later it turned to me breaking into I wouldn't call it breaking in since we're family, but entering suspiciously into my grandparents' home when they were away in Florida and eating boxes of Kraft mac and cheese and then purging. And I mean, and then walking out into the world and everyone telling me I looked great. And so that just continued into college, and even though I was probably 100 pounds lighter than I am now, I was always told, like, you're just the fat girl. And, like, I was treated like the fat girl. And that led to more weight gain. I don't know where anyone thought it was going. And it was finally when I was 27, I was like, okay, enough, enough. I'm tired. It's not working. I don't want to do this anymore. And my friend gave me a book that's called the Effit, if I'm not being totally rude, the Effit Diet, F-U-C-K. And it just changed everything. I just realized that everything I was told growing up, all the things I was expected to do, were just making me worse off. And I was like, enough is enough. And since then, I have not done a single diet. And it's the first time in my life, it's almost 2 years, that I haven't gained any weight. I haven't lost any weight, but I haven't gained any weight. And my whole life up until that point, I was always gaining weight. And here I am, just a little broken on the inside from all that, but trying to repair myself with a community as well.
Yeah. Now, did you, or have you in the past couple years, ever been afraid that you're going to fall back into an unhealthy cycle? Or did that kind of diet book really help change your mindset? And now with this community that you have, you're in a better place.
Oh, I still like constantly, I think with the lockdown, especially, you know, I experienced a lot of issues with feeling myself kind of gravitating back to my anorexia. I also recently was diagnosed with ADD, and the medication for that kind of cuts off your hunger. So it's kind of like accidentally pulling myself towards my anorexic tendencies and then experiencing the binge. So I've had to work a lot to balance that. And I mean, life always throws curveballs and emotions, and the way I dealt with emotions was either diet culture or binge. And so I still struggle with that, and I feel that pull. But I mean, 17 years of diets and binges and eating disorders is not going to get solved in 2 years. I think 17 years of that is probably going to get solved in 27 years of, you know, recovering. You know, that's just not... The harm always requires almost twice as much good to, you know, repair yourself. And I understand that. But I think knowing what I want and having my mind set on that helps a lot. Knowing that I don't want to go back to dieting and binging keeps me at least working towards the right goal. Whereas before, I had no idea. I just thought I was broken and that I couldn't lose weight and everybody was successful and I was a failure. And now I know, like, the system doesn't work for me. Keep your eye on the prize. But there's always battles. There's always things that come up. I mean, especially if you're a millennial, there's always something going wrong in life and, like, nothing's good. And so, yeah, you just always have to work against those barriers. But I think having that goal and knowing exactly what I do and do not want to do helps me get over those hurdles.
Now, what sort of goals do you have? Is it purely just don't fall back into those cycles, or is there something else you're working towards?
I think right now it's don't fall back into those cycles. Don't give in to diet culture, especially being on TikTok and now being more of a personality on TikTok, having comments and my feet. It doesn't matter how many times I click not interested on weight loss videos, I'm still getting them. So it's just right now it's don't fall back into that. This is what you want. I've always been an active person. So I guess on the sideline of that is, you know, do keep up with activities you love, stay active. A huge thing for me is realizing I hate the gym. With COVID, I had to give up my gym membership and I had to set up a gym in my garage because I couldn't go even when they were open because of my Nana. And I realized how much I love that so much more. I hate lifting weights. I never want to lift a weight ever again in my life. And that's fine. I love boxing. I love dancing. I love hiking. I love swimming. I love all of these things that are fun to me, and I'm way more likely to do that than go lift weights. All the credit in the world to people who like lifting weights. That just ain't me. And that's okay. I think, like, we're expected to like these things that everybody else likes, but that's never going to happen. I don't like running. I don't have the front or the back of my body to cooperate with running. I don't like it. I don't like lifting weights. It personally, it's just not interesting to me. But do I like picturing my enemies and punching a bag for an hour? Absolutely. So I focus on staying active because it feels good, and I focus on not going back to diet culture. And I think those two are kind of intertwined because I had to redefine my relationship with fitness in order to not go back to diet culture, because diet culture fitness is very different from just staying active to improve your health or maintain your health. Those are two very different forms of fitness. So those two are where I'm at now. I don't know what in the future is my goal. I'm not very good at planning into the future. So we'll start there. We'll go there.
And that's okay. You don't need to have some big lofty goal. And, you know, the goals that you have are good. And especially in times of a pandemic, to just be like, hey, I'm gonna keep moving forward, is, I think, so important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So what, you know, I use the term fat activism. I think it's literally in your TikTok bio, fat activist. So what can you explain that a little bit?
So a huge part of what I try to do with my account is to fight against stereotypes and depictions of fat people, but specifically fat women. I don't think it can be ignored that fat phobia and fat stigma is put on women far more than it is on men. I mean, if you just look at a commercial, you will see loving husbands that are fat men, but if it's a fat woman, she's somehow like broken, or it's a medication to fix her, or she's being mocked. There, even in those simplest terms, fat stigma is implicated on women way more. So that is why I focus on fat women specifically. I also am a fat woman, so that also has a huge part of it that people seem to ignore. But I always grew up seeing fat women as unproductive members of society, lazy, not hardworking. If they had anything to provide, it was comedic relief. They weren't the pretty ones. They weren't the love interest. They were the joke. Or they were the before photos. You know, when you have the classic, like, high school weight loss comes back and gets the guy. And so I grew up seeing that, but I knew, like, I was more than that. And now being, you know, I'm in law school, that requires a lot of hard work. I had to apply twice to actually get in because of a poor GPA in my undergrad, and I worked hard to do that and to get in, and I even got a scholarship. I am a law student as a living caretaker. I am a world traveler and have been to 24 countries, and in that, I have hiked all over the world. I whitewater rafted the Zambezi, which is like the second hardest river to raft in the world. I bungee jumped. I have fed baby elephants with a bottle. Like, I've done these incredible things that I think so many people don't realize is something that fat women can and do. And so my fat activism is breaking these stereotypes and saying, no, we are beautiful women. We are the love interests. I mean, I never in a million years, if you told 10-year-old me that I would be married to someone who is thinner than me, who is all muscles, good looks, and is going to be a doctor, I'd be like, no, fat girls don't get that, man. Like, and so I use these experiences to say, we are the beautiful women. We deserve the best partners that life can give us. We can travel the world. We are hardworking. We are more than your comedic relief. And that is where my fat activism, I think, lies most. And then I also get into like the whole health bias of if you're skinny, you're healthy. If you're fat, you're not. I think that's absolutely just generally untrue. I, of course, am not a medical professional. I am closer to a medical professional than the people that lecture me about health on TikTok. But I mean, I just think that someone's health isn't your business, and you can be thin and unhealthy, and you can be fat and healthy. And for that, the mere existence of that fact, just don't talk about it. Don't assume things about others. Don't make it your business. Just scroll. So that's another thing I'm really, really passionate about, because I've always been lectured on health by people who, you know, snort cocaine and don't drink water and only drink Coke and never work out and live off of cheeseburgers, and then somehow lecture me on my health when I'm fat and like very active and eat very healthy. And it's just irritating. So yeah, I fight against those things.
I'm sure that that has got to be irritating. I can only imagine. And it's completely understandable that you focus on fat activism for women more than women and men, because as you said, like, you are a woman, you should be talking about your own experiences and not pretending that you understand someone else's.
Exactly.
I feel like in media there's so much of women body positivity, like specifically in clothing, you see it more and more, and you see the Facebook ads and people are like, I love the fact that you're showing my body type, and then there's the like, but you're not doing it for men. And it's like, one, men aren't wearing bikinis most of the time, so they can't do that.
Right. And also, like, I don't have a man's body to show you. Like, it's just mine. this is it. Like, I will hype up and support plus size men as much as I can. I think especially in the LGBTQ plus community, it's really, really important. But in general, it is important. Like, I will always support you. But like you said, I'm a fat woman. I'm going to speak to what I know, and that is being a fat woman. And then I also just don't think it's fair to ignore the fact that women face fat phobia, not only at a much smaller, lower weight, but in many different ways throughout life and at a much higher degree. I don't think that fact can be ignored. Does that mean I don't want to support plus size men? Absolutely not. I am here for you. But just like, don't get mad at me when my focus is fat women for multiple reasons.
Yeah. Now, do you think that the media is getting better, you know, compared to say when you were 10, when you were going through your teenage years? Is fat representation better than it was? Are there better examples of people, you know, not being the comedic relief, or have we not really made progress there?
I mean, it's better, but it's not that much better. I can only think of off the top of my head, like one or two movies where the love interest story for a plus size woman, A, she was even actually plus size or fat. Usually the fat actresses are not fat. And B, that it was actually like a love interest. It wasn't praising a man for looking past her body and loving her. I think there is more representation. There's more actresses. You know, obviously you can't ignore the fact that Lizzo is such an icon and is doing so much for not only fat women, but fat Black women, who, as much stigma as I face, you know, I will never understand the struggles of being a woman, being Black, and also being fat. I mean, that's just, I can never understand that. So I think it is better that we have that representation, but we literally, like, as a fat Black woman, you have Lizzo, you know? And like, I can only think of a handful of actresses that look like me. You know, I think for a minute there, Amy Schumer was kind of pitched as like our plus size representation. And she was like, I'm not plus size. And I was right there with her. I'm like, she's not plus size. She just has like, you know, a little meat on her bones. But like, I think she was like she floated between like a size 6 and 10. And it's just like, there still seems to be this like fear of bellies. Mm-hmm. And if I had to like explain it one way, it's like a fear of the belly. I think with models, we have plus size models, but they have flat stomachs. With actresses, we have plus size actresses, but they have flat stomachs. You know, I think I don't get to see bellies like mine, like ever, unless I'm on social media. And I don't think it's fair to have to get all your representation from social media. You know, I don't have to watch a movie and go to a comment section and see people say, I can just watch the movie, feel inspired, and turn it off. But when you only have your representation from social media, you look at it, you're in awe of this woman, and then there's comments below saying horrendous things. And when that woman looks just like you, you take those comments in stride and you kind of absorb them into your own psyche. And so I think it's important that we have representation in TV. Now, I will say one place where I'm absolutely in love with the representation is Shrill. Have you seen that?
I have not. No, I don't watch a lot of things.
That's fair. It's Adi Bryant from SNL. And she is giving us, like, I still need the next season to, like, know where this is going. But she is giving fat women the storyline we deserve of, like, journey, a personal journey, a professional journey, a love journey. That one, I will say, brings me a lot of comfort and joy. But generally speaking, no, I think we have so much farther to go for representation. And it's not just putting a fat body in a film. It's centering films around fat bodies, giving a good positive story to fat bodies. And we have a very long way to go before that is embraced to the degree that it should be, in my opinion.
Yeah, I definitely understand that. And I mean, I just admitted to not watching a lot of things. So it's hard for me to sometimes know, like, are things changing in media? Because I stick with animated movies and that's my guilty pleasure. You know, you kind of touched on it a little bit. The word plus size, and, you know, if Amy Schumer was considered plus size and she barely ever broke size 10, like, clearly that's not very fat. It's not a size 2, but most people aren't a size 2. So do you think it would be better if that term didn't exist or it was somehow realigned? Like, what in theory could we do to better kind of our mindsets and change the way we think about bodies?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for me to say because I think that, you know, terminology and who falls under terminology is a huge thing that comes up, especially I see it on TikTok. I had a video where a, like, visibly very thin girl was calling herself fat, and she had quite a large following, and it was kind of like in a mocking negative way. And I just said, you know, when you use that word negatively, the impact lies on bodies like mine, and not just in one way, but in several ways. So I just ask that when you're feeling like express yourself in different ways, there's many different words like bloated or, you know, even larger. And then this sparked a whole debate of like, well, maybe, you know, some people in my country, she would be considered fat. And I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Whoa, stop. And I think that's a huge problem with terminology is that it's like we're spreading the definition of that. And it does kind of feel like sometimes people think that if you're not a size 2, you're like on your way to plus size. And it does feel tempting to like, let's just get rid of it all. And I mean, truly, if we're not going to talk about other people's bodies, that's how it should be. There should be no terms. But at the same time, like, if I'm shopping online, I need to know if this place has clothes for me, and plus size is an indicator of that if it's on their website. You know, if I am trying to find content, like, plus size is how I find content that I can relate to. So I don't know if I have the answer for that. I don't think we'll ever have clear definitions of what things are. But I think, like, if someone is able, my definition, I think, is like if you're able to shop in what I refer to as straight sizes. And in stores that offer sizes, I think it's like typically 0 to 12. Like, that's a good place to start of like not being fat or plus size. Because plus size is, at the end of the day, a type of clothing. And I think that's a good place to start because it does have a lot of benefits for people like myself to identify spaces and services that apply to me. But then it also can be manipulated and used against both plus size and straight size women. So it's I don't know the answer. Life's complicated, I guess, is my answer.
Hey, and that's definitely okay. And you do bring up a good point. You know, whether it's shopping online or shopping in store, there is literally a plus size section. I will occasionally wander around a store and like not even realize what section I'm in. And I'm like, oh, this looks really cute. And then I'm like, I'm in the plus size section. I won't fit into any of these clothes. Let me go see if they have it in the women's section, which I feel like isn't even proper labeling, because it's like, oh, because you're plus size, you can't even shop in the women's section. You have to go to this separate section that's probably right next to maternity. And maternity's a whole world of its own. Like, you literally have to have clothes that are specifically shaped because, you know, you're growing a child inside of you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I super, super love when plus size. I'm looking at you, Target. When plus size is always next to maternity. My other favorite is at my local mall, the Macy's has plus size on a completely different floor from the rest of the women's clothing, next to home goods and children's clothing. And when I say it makes me so mad. It makes me so mad. And I even had an experience once where I was shopping and this woman passed by and went, oh, this is where the fat people clothes are. And she and her very young impressionable daughter just laughed. And I was like standing right there about with a bunch of different women. And I think like the fact if our clothes were just integrated with other clothes, that alone would make such a huge impact because things like that couldn't happen. And ostracizing us into this our own little unit. I mean, most stores carry petite clothes and they're just with the rest of the clothes, but they say petite on them. You know, very few stores have petite sections, and it's like, why can't you do that for the ones of us that are plus size? I don't know, it's just very frustrating. It's just this minor thing that has really big impact. And then you were speaking about how you end up in the plus size section. A lot of people, I've run into this so many times, will have that realization, but they won't handle it like you. They'll be like, oh God, this is plus size. Go, 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 go. And then you're standing there like, excuse me? And it's terrible. And if it was just integrated and we were women with clothes, it would solve a lot of issues, I think.
Yeah, and the solution, in my opinion, is not to go the, I believe it's TJ Maxx route, where everything is by size. Because, you know, with all of women's clothes, you can wear 5 different sizes and all of it feel and look the same way. Like, size is not a common factor.
No, I range. I think I can wear anything from, like, a 14 to a 20, depending. I have, like, a sweater that is a small that fits. Like, it makes no sense whatsoever. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. Separating by size, even individually, doesn't really help anybody either. It's just women. We just face it all.
Yes. Now, earlier you were talking about being a world traveler and doing all of these really exciting things. Was there any points where you were afraid to do anything so adventurous, or did your size ever limit you in any of those cases?
No, the only thing was with the bungee jumping, I wasn't able to, the weight requirements that the travel company I was traveling with, that they released beforehand, weren't accurate. So when we got there, for anyone considering bungee jumping, they always will weigh you and you will be weighed in front of other people. So that's why in my video I touched on having a thick skin. And we found out there that you had to be a certain weight to do the bungee jumping where you dangle by your feet. But we were, it was a friend and I, we were both in the same situation. We were able to do the, what is called a swing bungee, which is you have a harness and you're not going face down. So it was a little upsetting at the time. You know, my friend and I did get a little frazzled and a little teary eyed. But I still got to do something like incredibly amazing. So instead of focusing on what I wasn't able to do and like what happened, and like obviously people were asking like, why didn't you get to do that? And instead of focusing on that, I just focused on what I was able to do. And it was quite amazing and terrifying and wonderful and all of that. So that was kind of what taught me to like really do my homework ahead of time to like avoid that. But that was basically the only thing. The only thing I've ever run into is just like human beings. I think the worst, and I hate talking about like worst experiences, especially when it comes to traveling abroad, because I think Americans have a habit of speaking poorly about other countries very quickly and easily without taking stock on our own country. So I will say the worst experiences I've ever had in my life have always been in the United States of America. With that said, I went to Egypt with my husband. We weren't married at the time, though. And it was pretty bad as a fat person. My husband is Yemeni, so he is fluent in Arabic, which means that he heard all of the nasty comments people were saying about me. Like things like fat cow. And my husband is also honest to a fault and told me all of them. So that was hard. And like there's also the cultural aspect of like my husband being Yemeni. He looked Egyptian. And so people on the street would just be like screaming, "Is that your wife?" Men would come up and ask when our baby was due. Definitely wasn't pregnant. It was one guy even in English, so I could understand, bless his heart, yelled at my husband, "Why you married a white girl and not an Arab girl?" I mean, it was very forward and very uncomfortable for me. I did get engaged there. So, I mean, I have happy memories and they have wonderful, amazing landmarks that I would do it again just to experience the things and see the things that we did. Absolutely incredible. Absolutely amazing. Had great time when I wasn't around people, is what I had to, and then like I said, I hate talking, but that was like the hardest for me, I think, as a fat person. I do think it was a caveat of that is I think maybe the treatment was increased by, you know, the whole like my husband being Yemeni and me being white and us definitely not being married. Although people on the street didn't know that, but, you know, so I would say that was one. But of the 24 countries I've been to, that's like one of the only places that I've had a problem. Even being in Southeast Asia, going to Cambodia and Thailand, never really. I was traveling with my mother in a 55-year-old and up group that allowed me to. So maybe that helped. You know, I wasn't traveling with like a bunch of very thin people my age. But I'd never, even when I was off by myself, I never experienced any issues. And the food was magnificent.
I'm impressed that going back that you wanted to do the bungee jumping from your angles, just because like in my mind that is absolutely terrifying. And I thought, you know, doing the harness, I'm like, that seems cool, still terrifying, but cool. And then to hear you say that like you couldn't do it from your ankles, and I'm like, oh my gosh, that's even an option.
Yeah, I wanted to because it was the most terrifying and I wanted to like overcome my own fear. So I think maybe that's why I was so upset, because I had been like hyping myself up for this absolutely terrifying experience for like, it was about a week and a half into our trip. So for like 10 days, I've been like, you're going to do this. And then I walk up and they're like, you can't do this. And I was like, oh no. And there was also a girl in our group who was like I've said I'm 5'9". She was like 5'1" and was going around comparing her weight to everyone. But luckily, I have a very good resting bitch face, and she knew my arm was not the one to come to compare. So that's maybe another thing. Honestly, like, that was probably the most annoying thing I experienced on that trip as far as, like, weight and stuff. So it's just, don't travel with other Americans. I don't know.
Well, and hopefully, you know, it was a learning point for the company that you traveled with to make sure that they had the accurate information, because there was clearly two different weight limits and for the two different activities. So if they were advertising the one that had a less strict limit for both, and like, that wasn't the case. And, you know, you were still able to do something. So like you said, focusing on the positives really, you know, changes the outcome.
Oh, yeah. And I that was something else. I wrote up, like, they asked you to give feedback because it was a relatively new tour. And so I wrote up, like, a whole, like, dissertation, basically, on my feelings of that. And I also, my friend and I also spoke to the trip leader, and he was going to inform the company as well to change their materials. So I took comfort in the fact that I've made someone else's life easier, even though in that moment I wanted to die a little bit.
Now, I want to talk a little bit about law school and what your goals and your plans are for studying law.
You know, I don't know. the thing is with law school that I did not expect when I started a year and a half ago is a pandemic. And unfortunately, that has left myself and a lot of other law students very disassociated, not only from their law school experience, but also from the practice of law. I actually got an internship and a fellowship to go to Accra, Ghana last summer, which was canceled due to COVID. And it was canceled kind of last minute, so I wasn't able to get a replacement legal experience. I haven't been in my school for almost a year. I haven't been able to get the level of experience and exposure to different types of law that maybe someone would if it wasn't a pandemic. The economic toll is also at play with people offering legal internships, especially paid ones. And so I'm still kind of testing the waters. I always say that I'm more interested in people problems than company problems. So I don't want to do, like, corporate law or, transaction law or anything like that. I think I'm kind of looking towards family law or planning in estates, which I never would have thought of. But I like the whole working with people on their people problems. And property law is actually very fascinating and filled with a very tumultuous history. So if you're ever interested in reading up on property law and the cases that led to all of the things we have, it's very fascinating. So I don't know. I like people problems. That's where I've started. Currently, I'm working in an internship, and I'm working on consumer law, and it's on the nonprofit side. So it's fighting evictions and foreclosures on behalf of people that are near or under the poverty line. And I'm actually really, really, really enjoying that work. So I'm just finding out different things that I like. And I came into law school, like, dead set on I'm going to prosecute sex crimes. And then I did mock trial, and I was like, oh, I don't want to litigate this much. That's a heavy, heavy, heavy job. So I'm testing the waters.
And what were you doing before law school?
So I mentioned that I applied to law school twice because of a poor undergrad GPA. And that's kind of set me on a little bit of a journey. I started at a smoothie shop. And then I moved to high-end retail. I'm not sure if anyone is familiar with Shinola. It's a watch brand in Detroit. And then from there, I went into customer service for Audi, which was fascinating. And I give all the credit to the world to people who work in call centers. They do not get enough credit for the work they do. And then after that, I went into media, working on content managing for a company that works for GM. And then I was just like, wow, I'm doing a whole lot of nothing. Like, I'm just working for a paycheck. And so I decided I wanted to do something with my career that was actually a career, something I could dedicate myself to, something that I could feel like I was doing something that I cared about. And websites was not it. So I looked into law school and I decided, you know, even if I don't end up being a lawyer, this will help me get into the kind of work that I am like passionate about. And like I said, that's people problems. Like I like as much as I complain about people, I like people and I want to help them. and so that's kind of what led me there. But yeah, it was just a whole bunch of nothing, really.
And that's okay. I mean, you know, there's this expectation for people to know what they're doing by like age 25. And
right.
Especially now, like with millennials, a lot of us don't know what we're doing. And I think that that is okay.
Yeah, no, I mean, I laugh because of the hodgepodge that it all was. But in that time, I traveled to 23 countries. I went to, I think, I want to say like 8 or 10 of that time frame. I got married, you know. I had a savings account. I say had. Thank you, law school. You know, like I accomplished things in other ways, and that wasn't like finding my career and buying a house. And I think that's important. Like, you can accomplish, you can grow, or you don't have to, or you can just be a little bit stuck and wondering what you want to do. And that's absolutely fine. You're, like you said, like, to have it figured out by 25 is ridiculous. It's just, I mean, no, it's not good. It doesn't have to happen for everyone. And it certainly didn't for me.
Yeah, that's definitely okay. Now, I think I'm kind of out of questions for what I want to ask before we wrap up, but I'm sure, you know, we were talking beforehand, you could go on and on. Is there anything else specific that you want to share with the listeners?
I think another thing that I have experienced with my time on TikTok is a lot of questions of how do you find confidence? How do you find self-love? How do you accept your body? And it's such a difficult question to answer. And so I'm going to try to answer it now. No. the thing I just want to say about that is that we all start kind of as a blank canvas. And to those that struggle with their body and struggle with confidence, the way you got to that point is different for everyone, which means you have to deconstruct those feelings different from everyone. And that's why it's not a question that you can answer with like five tricks to self-confidence. It's a really long journey to identify what hurt you, what broke your relationship with your body, and how you can fix that. That being said, there are things that do help me. One, I try to do the things I do in life not to look good, but to feel good. So when it comes to what I'm eating, I eat what is going to make me feel good in that moment. Sometimes that is three tacos and a cheesy gordita crunch from Taco Bell. Sometimes that it's never a kale salad because I have IBS. But sometimes it's a romaine salad. you know, when I work out, I don't work out anymore for how I look to others. I work out to how I want to feel within my body. And I think just over time, prioritizing how you feel over what people see will always help you. The other thing that seems so simple, but I realized was such a huge help, is buying clothes that fit my body, not buying a size that I want my body to fit. Like I said, I range from anywhere from a 14 to a 20, and getting to that point where I was okay buying a 20 when I'd been a, like a 14, 16 for so much of my life. It was difficult. It shouldn't be. It's just a number. It's the same clothes. That 14 fits me just the same as the 20, but it makes such a huge difference, and you feel so much better in clothes that fit you, and you feel so much power, so much more powerful in clothes that fit you and look good and feel good, and you're not uncomfortable, and you're not making compromises to fit these clothes. You are finding clothes that fit you. Those two simple things just, they did a lot, a world of good. So that question comes up a lot, and 60 seconds isn't a lot of time to answer it. So I thought I would take the time now to just give my two cents on that. But I think that's about it.
And I think that's some great advice, and it's really good to just hear and kind of, I don't know, for me at least, it makes me feel good. You know, I wouldn't say I love my body, but I also wouldn't say I hate my body. So to kind of hear the things that help you, you know, feel good about yourself, I think is going to be good for a lot of people.
Yeah. And I think the other thing that maybe isn't talked about enough, and I certainly don't talk about enough, is that if you see a confidence person, there's nobody in the world that feels amazing, fantastic, like absolutely wonderful about their body 100% of the time. Like, I'm not absolutely in love with my body 24/7, 365. You know, I just aim for like one day a week where I am just, I am it. Like, I am my number one fan. And if I can just get that one day a week, that will help. And so I don't think anyone should feel pressured to hold themselves to a standard that doesn't even exist for that person they're looking at. Everybody has ups and downs. Obviously, some people have more downs and some people have more ups, but even just getting to that neutral point of like, I don't love my body, I don't hate it, but I have a body and I will care for it. I think that's just as great as someone like me that can just go on camera in front of God knows how many people, depending on who TikTok wants to show me to.
Definitely. Now, with all of my guests, before I close it out, I ask a random question that typically doesn't have to do with what we're talking about, just to kind of have something different and fun at the end. So my question for you is, if you had the ability to time travel and either go forward or go backwards and just kind of see what's going on, where would you go?
Oh my God. I would go backwards. I couldn't give a shit what's going to happen in the future. I think it's going to be bad, probably. I love history, so, oh God. I don't know when. You know what? Actually, I do know. Okay. I would want to go to 1935 in Hendon, London, UK, and I'd love to meet my grandparents as kids. I see that time period too, because like so much was happening and it was insane. But also, like, I just want to know what they were like. I only know them one way, and I want to know what they were like when they were younger. So that's very specific, but I always wonder what they were like younger, especially my Nana, how like the things you have to do to take care of a 94-year-old with dementia. It would be cool to see her as like a 9-year-old.
Yeah, that's really sweet and really cool that is, if you had the option, where you would go.
Thank you.
All right, that brings this episode to a close. For more information, if you want to check out Devin on TikTok, her handle is in the description, so I highly recommend checking her out if you are already on TikTok. And if you'd like to connect with the podcast, we are on social media, on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, Patreon for monetary support. And if you would like to guest on the podcast, you are welcome to email me. I'm always looking for new stories and love meeting new people. This has been so much fun with Devin. So that email address is in the description as well. I'd love to hear from you. And so, Devin, thanks so much for spending time with me today, and to my listeners for taking the time out of your day to hear a new story. Until next week, bye.
Thank you so much for listening to me, and for everyone, goodbye.